This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. From a relatively stable population of less than 25,000 in the 1970s, the number of California state prisoners rose to a high of 174,000 in 2007. Prison crowding reached dangerous levels, leading the federal court to rule in 2009 that the conditions were unconstitutional. When Governor Jerry Brown took office in 2011, California was under orders to cap prison counts, that's prisoner counts, to 110,000 inmates. Governor Brown's solution was realignment, which shifted the responsibility for parole violators and lower-level felons to California counties, moving these prison inmates to county jails, putting them closer to their homes and potentially improving their prospects for rehabilitation. On this segment of Your Legal Rights, we're going to be talking about California's criminal law justice system, including the public safety realignment prison overcrowding measure, Proposition 47, changing six low-level nonviolent crimes from felonies to misdemeanors, and Proposition 36, changing California's three strikes laws. This segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar and also by the San Mateo County Bar Association, San Mateo County, California Bar Association. My guests are Jeffrey Hayden, President of the San Mateo County Bar Association and criminal law specialist certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, Al Serrato, Assistant District Attorney, San Mateo County District Attorney's Office, and Judge Eugene Hyman, California Superior Court of Santa Clara County, retired. And what we're going to do, for those of you who are listening to us live, I want you to know that we will also be taking your calls in a little bit later in the program on the toll-free number, 866-798-8255. Pardon me. All right, let's do this. Jeff, if you would, since you are a criminal law specialist, would you very briefly talk about realignment? Give us a little something about realignment.
Sure. Thank you for having me, Chuck. Over a three-year period from 2012 to 2014, we saw three major changes in the criminal justice system, the first of which was realignment. Realignment was the first step in addressing overcrowding in the state prison system, which was virtually double its capacity at that point in time. What it did is it recategorized a series of felony offenses to where those offenses that would have carried a prison sentence now, even without probation, would still be served in the county jail. Up until realignment started in 2012, if you received a sentence on a felony case of more than a year, you were going to state prison. It would be followed by parole. The recidivism rate for those being released on parole was somewhere approximately two-thirds. About two-thirds of all inmates would violate before they completed parole.
60-some-odd percent, is that
yes.
right?
And most of those were violating within the first 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
The idea was to shift that to local jails rather than state prison for less serious offenses. The court has the ability to do things such as to split a sentence. More importantly, there are rehabilitative components that are best afforded at the local level. So this was a shift from sending people to serve their prison sentence in the prison sentence to those same folks serving their prison sentence at county jail. Mm-hmm. It's not a probationary sentence. It wasn't intended necessarily for leniency, but rather to realign how and where they would serve those sentences.
Okay. And has it been successful, Al, do you think?
Well, it depends on how you define success, obviously, Chuck. I mean, it's accomplished the goal of lowering the prison population, which was one of its major goals, and in that sense, I think you'd have to say it was successful. There are problems with it, obviously, as there would be in any system where we try to deal with large numbers of individuals and yet keep an individualized approach to both deter future misconduct and to provide rehabilitation, if that's possible.
You know, in my research for this, and I have done quite a bit of research with a lot of help from Judge Hyman in terms of directing me to various things, but on August 16th, 2014, L.A. Times, the L.A. Times newspaper, a reporter did a report of an investigation that the L.A. Times had done. And I didn't even know about this. Apparently there is some state jail commission that reported that 13,500 inmates were being released early each month. Now, we're talking about from county jails, not just from the state prisons. And the report was that this was a 34% increase over the last 3 years, and that jail data showed that incarceration in some counties has been curtailed or virtually eliminated for a variety of misdemeanors, including parole violations, domestic violence, child abuse, drug use, and driving under the influence. And so we need now to turn to Prop 47, which actually, Al, if you would summarize that for the listeners in terms of who has been affected by Prop 47, and are we seeing really any improvements in this other than shifting the population from state prison to county jails, and really with county jails being overwhelmed, not keeping these people in and letting them out early.
Sure.
For example, there is one statistic where in L.A. County, which has a quarter of California's jail population, this is county jail population, male inmates often are released after serving as little as 10% of their sentences, and female prisoners in the county jail in L.A. only after 5%. Go ahead, Al
sure.
Serrato, please.
So you're talking about two different things there, obviously.
Yes,
one of
that.
Them is the early release, and the second is Prop 47, which is the law that was passed last year that affected the changes that you started to mention in your introduction. What it did was it took a number of our very common theft and drug-related offenses that in the past had been what we call wobblers or straight felonies. A felony is something that can carry with it a longer sentence, a prison sentence historically until realignment changed the location of the service of a sentence, as Jeff just talked about. And wobblers being charges that you could charge either as a felony or as a misdemeanor in the discretion of the prosecutor. And for those very common theft and drug-related offenses, the discretion to charge them as a felony was taken away, essentially, and they've been made straight misdemeanors, with some exceptions for prior record, typically. And those exceptions are very rare. Certain types of prior convictions would prevent someone from being treated as a misdemeanor offender. The theft sections are typically shoplifting, burglary, and theft generally. And they set a limit of $950. So thefts under $950 generally are going to fall under this Prop 47 category and be treated as straight misdemeanors, regardless of the record of the individual. And in drug possession cases, the typical drugs that we see commonly, heroin, cocaine, and methamphetamine.
This is possession, not sales.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Straight possession was once either a felony, a straight felony, or a wobbler, which we could treat as a felony. So that was the effect of Prop 47. It took away that discretion and made, for most defendants, these types of offenses straight misdemeanors.
Judge Hyman, I wonder, Jeff, you wanted to say something.
Just very briefly, when you were discussing early release, I think we have to be very cautious not to use L.A. County as a model of what's happening throughout the state.
Good. I'm glad to hear you say that.
I spent some time as a deputy public defender in L.A. County. Even back as early as the mid-90s, they had this huge new jail complex but didn't have the staffing to actually use the entirety of the jail. And they had a program at that point in time where somebody was expected to serve 35% of the time that they would have spent in jail on a given sentence. So at that point in time, if you received a one-year jail sentence, you would serve 80 days.
Mm-hmm.
If you received a six-month sentence, you would serve 43 days.
Mm-hmm.
That was back in 1994, 5, 6. And I don't think that's a good model to use for what's happening in the rest of the state because they've been on early release. And I don't know what was referred to as early release for the purpose of this article, but if you're shifting people from going to prison where it's expected that you would serve a pretty good clip of your sentence and go to a county jail where you're in essence serving a bit over 20% of that sentence, that alone would account for a lot of what they're discussing. So I think that the L.A. County experience may skew the model.
Okay, good. I'm glad you clarified that. Judge Hyman, what do you have to say about this? at this point?
Well, I have some serious concerns, obviously, when people are getting out before their sentences are completed because of unavailability of facilities. I think whether you're talking about realignment or whether you're talking about Proposition 47, there was an assumption by the voters that these people were going to be supervised. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the expectation. And what I'm hearing is that some, depending upon the county, you have 58 counties, you have 58 different ways of doing things. Counties decided how to use the money that they received, whether it be realignment or whether it be as a result of Proposition 47. And not all counties are spending their money equally. In some counties, probation hired people in order to be able to supervise people that were on realignment release and to supervise people that went via Proposition 47. I supported Proposition 47 because I had concerns about too many people that were being made felons, and even if their records were later reduced to misdemeanors, in terms of their ability to get professional licenses or the like, those boards would treat them as felons for the rest of their life, and I didn't think that was particularly helpful. But the assumption that I made was that a person on who pled or was found guilty of a Proposition 47 type crime was going to be supervised by probation, and that in the event that they violated their probation, they would be brought back, they would be prosecuted for the violation, and they would receive appropriate consequences for that violation. In Santa Clara County, there isn't jail overcrowding in terms of early release that causes the kinds of problems that
There is not. Okay.
I don't think there is early release in San Mateo County either, but I'll defer to the San Mateo people that are here to address that. I mean, my expectation as a former judge is that when people violate probation or violate the law, they're appropriately held accountable. So if they're offered, if it's a drug offense, if they're offered drug treatment court, and if they turn that down, which of course they have the right to do, then they're placed on formal probation, in which case they're supervised. They have to test. They still have to do programming. It just isn't within the context of a drug treatment court.
What does that mean by programming? What do you mean by that?
They have to do substance abuse counseling.
I see. Okay.
And the probation officer arranges for that or refers them to a program. And if they don't go or if they test dirty, my expectation is that they're going to be brought back to court for a violation of probation and that there's going to be appropriate consequences for that violation. In other words, I think as a result of being supervised appropriately and being brought back and receiving consequences, more of these people ultimately would hopefully go into a drug treatment court environment, because right now there are a lot of people are declining drug treatment court because they feel that the now that it's a misdemeanor rather than a felony, that the consequences that they might receive are a lot less severe. I recognize there's that possibility in terms of that viewpoint, but I feel that as a result of appropriate supervision and appropriate consequences for violations, that hopefully some of that that behavior can be changed. I think it's critical in order that the citizens have confidence in terms of the courts and in terms of those that serve the courts, the police, probation, the prosecutor, defense, everyone, that these people be appropriately supervised and receive appropriate consequences. I'm not naive. I understand that in many counties, the system, that is the courts and the ancillary people that participate, aren't treating misdemeanors the same as they would a felony, and it's viewed as a less serious kind of situation, in which case then these people aren't being supervised. They're continuing to use substances. They obviously have to steal to support their habits, and that isn't why 47 was passed, and I think there needs to be consequences. The question is, how does a community get the courts and everyone else to take these cases appropriately seriously and to issue appropriate sanctions for violations in order to make it work? And that is the struggle that we have to deal with.
Jeff Hayden, as a criminal law specialist, defense attorney, do you feel 47 is working, or do you think it's still too early?
I think it's too early to see the long-term effects. It's been with us for less than a year. I think prospectively, it's a very positive thing. It's not a panacea. It does have some problems. It may be a little broad in its reach, but prospectively, it tends to be a positive influence. That most of the things that have been decriminalized or lessened their criminality, the small thefts that don't involve force, violence, anything of that nature, that part's positive. I have two reservations on a personal level. I can't speak for the bar. I can't speak for other practitioners. One of them has to do with the drug offenders, in the sense that when somebody is using to the extent that they are lost, and I hate to say it, but it does happen, it's helpful to have some leverage to get them into treatment. And I've had countless clients that come out and thank me for steering them into treatment and preventing them from prison, the most recent of which was this morning. The other area that I think reasonable people can disagree is the retroactive application of Prop 47. I tend not to see the problem with it, but I admit that they cast a pretty broad net, so that somebody who was convicted of tax evasion may be able to get it reduced to a misdemeanor. I'm using the Al Capone example, when the prosecution never would have cut that deal if they thought that that could have been reduced and he would have been released from Alcatraz. And there's an equivalence through the system. Mm-hmm. I tend to think it's not going to be a big problem. It may be a small, small hiccup over a short period of time. But I don't see long term. I think most of Prop 47 is good. I think there are a few things we could do to fine tune it.
But Prop 47 does have a retroactivity situation, in that if you have been convicted previously of a felony under these nonviolent, non-sex, non-murder types of crimes, you can petition the court where you were sentenced to get a reduction. To request a reduction from a felony to a misdemeanor. So that is possible for people.
It's more than possible. It's almost automatic.
Okay.
But there's a very limited window. Anybody listening, if you have a family member, a friend that may have had a conviction on one of these enumerated offenses, contact an attorney, contact the public defender's office. Do what you can now. You have a 3-year window from the passage of that proposition to get that fixed.
And the proposition was passed when? What year was it? Do you remember?
November of 2014.
Okay.
So it's all very, very new.
Okay. All right. So, Al, please. Al Serrato.
Well, in light of that last comment, I actually brought some numbers with me about cases we've reviewed on that retroactivity aspect of it. And since the passage of the proposition, about 3,300 cases were reviewed. And of those, 3,080 were reduced. So clearly it is something.
Now, for not just for San Mateo County, was it?
That's for our county, yes.
Really? That many?
Yes.
Okay, pardon me. Go ahead.
No, that's all right. And among those, we kept track of some notables. Individuals, I'm looking at a list right now. An individual had 26 prior convictions, 22 felonies. Three of those were reduced. He had done 10 prison sentences over the course of his criminal career.
Yeah.
When he comes back through the system, if he comes back through for theft or some drug-type violation, possession violation, he'll be treated as a misdemeanor. And looking at another 26 convictions, 12 of those felonies, 2 prison terms. Another individual with 38 convictions, 14 of those felonies.
How do we know that there's anybody watching him, a probation officer, a parole officer?
Well, there wouldn't necessarily be anyone watching him, but the point I'm trying to make is that when that individual comes through the system again, because as the judge noted, I think it's commonsensical that people who are addicted to drugs, who have that as a lifestyle, are going to steal to support that habit. They're going to be involved in acts of violence oftentimes. Their lives are going to spin out of control, and when that happens, they're going to commit crime. And so when they come before the court, what we wanted was the flexibility that the law had given us in the past, and that flexibility included providing the incentive that they needed. And that incentive might be tough love. It might be sending them to prison for a long enough period that they realize that they finally need to change so that they can take advantage of a program.
If I may, Al, on this, with someone who has had a problem with drugs and was convicted of one or more drug offenses, and let's say not sales, which is a much more serious crime, if that person has been able to get a reduction from a felony to a misdemeanor, has the court, at least in San Mateo County, has the court or the judge or judges involved ordered that this person or these persons undergo some kind of treatment program?
Well, not for the past reductions. If someone has served their sentence, they have a felony. I understand.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So, and I'm not saying that it's always wrong. My point isn't to say that Prop 47 was completely, badly intended. It's that it was overbroad, that what we need in this system is what the law had given us initially, which is discretion, flexibility, mm-hmm. and that's both the DA's office and the court as well that gets to weigh in to reduce mm-hmm. something mm-hmm. in certain settings. And so I gave you some examples of cases where Prop 47, I think, was mistaken in that it went too far. In other situations, we can exercise discretion and charge a drug violation, a possession violation, as a misdemeanor. The system has many different options of deferred entry of judgment, of diversion, of treatment court where there is no penal sanction, so that a person is given multiple opportunities to try to get their lives back in order before we start thinking about incarceration as a goal of the system. And so and one last point in that regard, and this probably was one of the unintended consequences. When you're dealing with someone who's addicted to drugs, and they get arrested by the police for a felony offense, they're going to go in custody. They're going to have bail set. They probably won't be able to make bail. So they're going to deal with their issue, with their case, in a more expeditious way, mm-hmm. probably plead and get into a program so that they might be able to get started on recovery. Today, with the misdemeanor, they're going to be cited. They're going to be given a ticket, essentially, and told to show up in court. And what we're seeing is predictable. They're not showing up. Mm-hmm. They get a ticket to show up 6 to 8 weeks later. And in that time period, they're committing more crime, they're using more drugs, they're supporting that by acts of violence or theft. In fact, I hear police officers report that when they're citing people, sometimes these defendants will laugh at them. So
really?
Write the ticket, because it's not going to do anything.
That's not very helpful.
Right. So when that kind of takes effect, you're going to end up with the unintended consequence that the people that you're most trying to help, that drug abuser, who
they're laughing at you.
They're not getting the help that we want to give
that's
them.
That's not good.
Right?
That's not good. Let me do this before we go to Judge Eugene Hyman. For those of you who have tuned in a little bit late, this is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're talking about some of the recent changes in the California criminal law justice system. We've been talking about realignment. We're now talking about Proposition 47, which changed 6 low-level nonviolent crimes from felonies to misdemeanors. We haven't touched yet upon changing California's 3 strikes laws, but let me tell you who's here. We have Judge Eugene Hyman, California Superior Court Judge, Santa Clara County, retired. We have Assistant District Attorney Al Serrato, San Mateo County District Attorney's Office, and Jeff Hayden, President of the San Mateo County Bar Association and Criminal Law Specialist certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. In just a few minutes, for those of you who are listening to the program live, and we're doing this on October 14th, you'll be able to call in. That number is toll-free, 866-798-8255, with your questions about criminal law, if you like, 1-866-798-8255. Judge Hyman, I know you want to respond to something, some one or more things that Al Serrato had to say.
Well, I share his concern with respect to the individual that he gave as an example, but let's remember why 47 came into being in the first place. My 20 years as a judge, and granted, not all of that was served in the criminal division in Santa Clara County, I never saw once, not once, where a drug charge that could be charged as a misdemeanor was charged as a misdemeanor. Mm. Not once. Always charged as a felony. With respect to checks, not once in 20 years did I ever see a check ever charged as a misdemeanor. Always charged as a felony. Not
when
one,
you say a check, a forged check?
Any kind of a check violation.
Okay.
Insufficient funds, whatever. And we're talking about Obviously, large amounts would be a different story, but I'm talking about small amounts. I never saw a person who, let's say, was shoplifting but went in with the intent, which would be burglary. I always saw them charged as second-degree burglary. Mm-hmm. So, yes, the district attorney has huge discretion, as does the court. Judges usually defer, and I think appropriately so, to the executive branch in terms of their charging. Judges are representatives of their communities, and if the DA wishes to charge as a felony, 99% of the time, and with respect to myself too, it was rare that I reduced felonies to misdemeanors because I deferred to the discretion of the executive branch because I think they should be deferred to. So there was all of this charging always, almost always, as felonies. Where there was a reduction, it took place at the end as a reward. But by then, it's too late in terms of a person's life, in terms of a person's future. Secondly, with respect to the person who is laughing at being cited and released and then fails to appear, I share the concern that Mr. Serrato is expressing. That's wrong. And I think that the court needs to respond appropriately with respect to the setting of bail, with respect to that failure to appear, and with respect to a consequence when ultimately the person is caught and brought in. There needs to be consistency. There needs to be consequences. And to the extent that a court is not taking matters seriously because they're misdemeanors, then there needs to be a community response in terms of getting the court to take those misdemeanors seriously. We're talking about six particular crimes for which, absent people that have been described, no one's going to state prison. The average person is not going to state prison for any of those prior six crimes that were charged as felonies unless the person had a horrible record. So the question is, should people suffer a lifetime consequence of having had a felony, even if it was later reduced to a misdemeanor, for that type of situation, especially if it was caused by substance
abuse?
Let
me interrupt at this point because we've come to the end of the statewide version of the program. Believe it or not, that clock on the wall is wrong, unfortunately. We will continue, for those of you listening to us live on October 14th, we will continue and you'll be able to have a chance to call in. What we do with the first half hour is we record it, we send it out to 15 stations in California that air that half hour next week. All right, it is actually California time. It's about 7:28 p.m. For those of you who are listening to us and would like to call in, the number, toll-free number, 1-866-798-8255, 1-866-798-8255. And again, let me just tell you who my guests are. We are talking about, and we welcome, by the way, your questions about the criminal law. I have some very experienced people here who I'm sure would try to give you some direction if you have a question about yourself or someone close to you. My guests are Jeff Hayden, president of the San Mateo County Bar Association. He's also a criminal law specialist certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California. Al Serrato, assistant district attorney. This is San Mateo County in California of the district attorney's office. And California Judge Eugene Hyman of the Santa Clara County Superior Court, retired. So join us with your questions, your comments, your concerns, if you have them, 1-866-798-8255. Support for KOW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. For a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services Program of the San Francisco Bar, call 415-989-1616, 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own at 650-369-1616. 1-800-650-3649, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. They'll do their best to find someone who's experienced for you in that area for half an hour. Pardon me, for half an hour consultation, you'll pay somewhere between $25 to $35. There's a rare exception of that, and that money doesn't go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service to keep that very fine service going. All right, we're going to start with Liz. Liz, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. I'm a criminal appellate attorney. I'm like a public defender for the appeal. And I'm calling because I didn't really hear our perspective in the panel, nor did I hear the perspective of the voters who passed these initiatives and who have been lobbying for realignment. So I wanted to address some things.
Well, go ahead.
Okay. So the judge started to address it a bit at the right when I called in, but basically the voters have been reacting to our horrible overcrowded situation in the prisons, the fact that our schools are being bankrupt by prison spending, and the fact that the district attorney is very rarely used at their discretion to pursue wobblers, and we have people serving very long sentences for felony violations for low-level offenses, and when they do eventually get out, they don't have job prospects. And so the carrot that the DA was talking about in terms of giving the option of a wobbler and probation, that wasn't working. It was a stick that was being employed that was resulting in these things. So if we can use the funds that we're now saving on prison spending towards actually creating programs for drug offenders, people who are committing theft crimes because they have no money, can't get a job, if we direct those funds to those programs, that would be a much more effective way of solving the problem than scaring the population back into having these relying on district attorney discretion and judicial discretion.
Okay. You want some comments on what you've just said, Liz?
Sure.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for calling. And you are you're connected with what agency?
So I'm a criminal attorney for several courts of appeal.
Uh-huh.
So I get appointed to handle the appeals by convicted persons. And I've had a number of clients with Proposition 47 and Proposition 36 petitions. I will also just quickly add, when Mr. Hayden mentioned that Proposition 47 petitions have been fairly automatic, not been the case for Proposition 36.
Okay.
The Attorney General have been fighting very hard to keep Proposition 36 eligible petitioners in prison.
Let me get some comments from my guests on that. Thank you very much, Liz, for calling. Al Serrato, Assistant DA, San Mateo County, what about Prop 36? Would you mind responding to that last part that Liz raised about it's not so automatic with respect to the three strikes law, Prop 36?
That's a more technical question in terms of how that's treated. But I think the thing that really needs to be mentioned, the comment's been made now twice that district attorneys rarely use their discretion. There are 58 counties in the state. Mine is one. And I can tell you as a matter of fact that that is just not true for San Mateo County. We would charge the first offense of a wobbler drug offense as a misdemeanor in every case. Mm-hmm. That was a policy. We start off on burglaries and on grand thefts as misdemeanors. We charge thousands. We charged, historically, thousands and thousands as misdemeanors because we employed a graduated response, someone who had not been through the system before, someone who had a minimal record or the crime itself wasn't particularly aggravated, did not need to be treated as a felon. So I would suggest that the solution in a participatory democracy like we have is to vote a district attorney out of office who mm-hmm. doesn't meet mm-hmm. what the community wants. Instead of using what is essentially a one-size-fits-all type of response and taking away the discretion where it's needed. I'd also say that when you talk about thefts of $950, I've talked to merchants, small business owners, that's a lot of money. That's taking food off their table in some cases if it's a small enough establishment. It's affecting their ability to hire people who want to be gainfully employed, because those kinds of losses are not things that they can sustain. So a system of justice has an obligation to look at those people and say, we're going to make an effort to protect you, to help you maintain the integrity of your store or your business, and not say that it's not that big a deal if you keep it under $950. Mm-hmm. So there are victims out there as well who are being affected. And while we want to rehabilitate drug offenders and people who are convicted of crime generally, we need to stay focused on the fact that they're causing harm when they do things. That's why we have police departments. That's why we have court systems. And a carrot and stick approach has worked historically. So I reject the notion that what we were doing wasn't working. Okay. It needed to be fine-tuned, needed to be changed, but I wouldn't throw out all of it.
Okay. All right. Jeff Hayden, please.
Two quick notes. The first is, when I said Proposition 47 petitions are routinely granted, and Al was good enough to give us some examples of what hits the DA's desk and then the courts in San Mateo County, those have been largely screened. There are three protections in Prop 47 itself so that certain types of offenders are not eligible, one of which are those that have violent felonies and or registered sex offenders are not covered by these reforms. There is a catch-all provision if you can show that they pose an unreasonable risk to public safety. Mm-hmm. And lastly, is the list of offenses itself that are covered by Prop 47. It's only theft offenses, only drug offenses. It's a very short list. It covers an awful lot of the criminal justice consumers, if you will, but it's a small list of offenses, and none involve violence at all. But the other comment I wanted to make is when Liz made her comments, and I appreciate those comments, Liz referred to Prop 36, which we really haven't brought into the discussion yet. We're not talking about the Drug Reform Act of Prop 36.
No.
We are talking about the Three Strikes Reform Act of
yes.
Prop 36.
Yes.
I sat in this room on air with the district attorney from San Mateo County, Steve Wagstaff, and we discussed that measure. And what I found when Al was just mentioning what they are doing in San Mateo County, that's not that far askew from what Prop 36 or the Three Strikes Reform Measure provided.
Mm-hmm.
But much of the state was on a different page. And one of the things that poses great problems is that you could commit a small theft in one county and it would be treated as something more serious, almost a robbery, in another county by virtue of traveling a few feet. Mm-hmm. We've had cases where either because they were involved in some other investigation, officers from northern cities in San Mateo County will cross into San Francisco and make arrests there, bring people down here, and what's happened to them was very far askew from the way they would have been treated in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a pattern statewide where somebody faces really different consequences by traveling a very, very minimal distance. And one of the things that this tried to address is the disparity in treatment between different people that may be from the same household or the same neighborhood because of traveling a very short distance.
Let me make an announcement to you before we take the next call. And, pardon me, and this is for those of you in the San Francisco Bay Area. Pardon me, the San Mateo County Bar Association tomorrow, that's October 15th, is hosting a presentation for the public on police misconduct and civil rights violations with nationally respected civil rights attorney John Burris and Carlos Bolanos, Undersheriff of San Mateo County. And for attorneys who attend, this is approved for 1.5 hours of elimination of bias MCLE credit. They'll know what that means. If you'd like more information, if you're a member of the public or if you're an attorney, you can go to the San Mateo County Bar Association's website, smcba.org, or call 650-298-4030, 650-298-4030. That's tomorrow, Thursday, October 15th at 5 p.m., actually at the old courthouse in Redwood City. All right, let's talk with Dave. Welcome to the program.
Good evening, gentlemen. I appreciate being on the phone here. I'm actually calling this evening as a former crime victim. My lady and I were subjected to a hot burglary in 2007. We're in the home, and we were sleeping, and the perps came in, robbed us, and left. Fortunately, we didn't wake up. I don't know what we'd have done if we had.
Boy, you're heavy sleepers.
Yeah, well, we were that night. Yes, I admit, But the fact is that I felt, I've been in this system, is that on the other end of the spectrum, I've been a social worker. I had been for many years, so I'm not, I just felt that the victims are the last people to be considered in this. Mm. And I will proudly say I did not vote for either Prop 36 or 47. I am sad that either of them passed. I think that that's a travesty on the right-thinking human beings of the state, and it just angers me to hear you people defending these drug garbage people who should just, to my view, I won't lie, I think they should fry. I really do.
Ooh. I'm glad you've held back on us, Dave. Let me get some comments for you. Thanks very much for calling. Take care. Any comments, gentlemen? All right.
Well, obviously,
we don't want to
see people fry. I know he's expressing his emotional feeling about it, but
throw the key away. I think at the very least he said throw the key away.
This was burglary. Sure. This was burglary.
Well, it's a residential burglary. That's a real violation, obviously, but it's a measured response that you want, and it's tailored to meet the defendant. That's why we have probation departments to put together probation reports. That's why we look at the full spectrum in making decisions, and that's how a rational system of justice should work. And so that's what I would say to his comment.
Jeff Hayden.
I also want to make it abundantly clear, somebody committing a residential burglary, a hot burglary, as Dave described, would not benefit from relief prospectively or retrospectively from any of these propositions. That is a violent felony under the law. Mm-hmm. And not only would that not be reducible to a misdemeanor under Prop 47, but the mere fact that it's a violent felony would preclude any relief later. So we haven't done anything for the types of people that victimized Dave.
So, Dave, there you are. That might give you a better feeling about the effect of Prop 47. But thank you very much for calling. All right, Greg, welcome to the program. Let me give the phone number again, if you would, Greg, for just a minute. It's our toll-free number, 1-866-798-8255, 1-866-798-8255, on your legal rights. And, Greg, to you. Go ahead.
Hey, I just had a problem with what, someone was saying about, someone would test dirty and then they go back to prison. I think that completely discriminates against the folks who don't have enough money to go to cushy rehab. I hear that, the person who doesn't have that much money is going to go to this rehab that basically treats you like a prisoner or go back to jail and prison, period. Whereas you clearly do not see rich folks going back to prison for being addicted to drugs. And hello?
Yeah, no, we're here. Anything else?
So that's the... That's my question. You can make that into a question if you want to.
Well, why don't you try to define it a little bit better? When you say it's a question, what really is your question?
Well, you're talking about this these folks who are being sent back to prison. You act like everyone is equal within the system, and when clearly it's not.
Well, let's get some clarification for him on this. Go ahead, Jeff, if you would.
Well, Greg, you brought forth a very good point. There is a very disparate impact between people of different social classes in the criminal justice system, and it shows more in drug offenses than most anywhere else. You brought up the example of somebody testing dirty who might go to rehab or really bad rehab or maybe go to prison.
Yeah.
It's also true in other contexts. For example, somebody possessing cocaine for sale would face a year less in prison than somebody with crack cocaine for sale, one of which you need to have a lot of money to be snorting cocaine, maybe less so to be smoking crack, and yet they face an extra year.
Wait a minute, Greg, let Jeff finish, please.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I think that there is a very disparate impact between people who have money not only to mask what they're doing, but also to set up a safe haven, as opposed to those who don't. Hopefully this mitigates some of those differences and would help afford people into rehab that might have been going into prison before. There is a book I read as an undergraduate called The Rich Get Richer, The Poor Get Prison. And I don't see that as having changed a whole lot. So I tend to agree with your comments.
So, Al Serrano.
I think that probably overstates it. I think there is obviously a benefit to being rich. And you're going to be able to buy things that others can't buy. I flew cross-country recently, and I was not in first class, and I wish I were, because that's a lot more comfortable. But the point is that services are available, and those programs, if someone can't pay for them, they're going to be offered to them. They're not going to be excluded because they can't pay for a program.
How is it that they will not be excluded? Because I think that's what one of Greg's problems
is. No, I think what Greg is saying that someone with resources is going to get a better program.
Well, sure, right? Of course.
And so I'm trying to make the point that that's true as an observation, but there's really little that we can do about it, in the sense that what fairness requires is that we provide opportunity. And we've gone beyond that by funding most of this opportunity. So it may not be a Cadillac. It may be something less than that. And it's true that the rich person is going to be able to get the Cadillac.
Okay.
But the point of the system is to address wrongdoing, to deter misconduct, to protect the good and punish the wrongdoer. Mm-hmm. And if we first wait for everyone to be equal economically, we'll have chaos.
Well, that'll never happen, unfortunately.
Right. Yeah. And that's the point I'm trying to make.
Greg, thank you very much for calling. All right, let me give you the number again, toll-free number, in case you have a question, a comment, a concern that you'd like to share with my guests. 1-866-798-8255, 1-866-798-8255. For those of you who may have tuned in a little bit late, my guests are Jeff Hayden, president of the San Mateo County Bar Association, criminal law specialist, criminal law defense, actually, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Al Serrato, Assistant District Attorney, San Mateo County District Attorney's Office. And California Judge Eugene Hyman, Superior Court of Santa Clara County, retired. So if you have a question, a comment, or something that you'd like to share with my guests and for everyone listening, please join us, 1-866-798-8255. Another something that I'd like those of you in the Bay Area to know about, it'll be a little bit later this month, actually about 10 days or so from now, because October is Domestic Violence Prevention Month, the Coordinated Response Committee of the Domestic Violence Council of San Mateo County and Garfield Community School Administration, that's in Menlo Park, California, have a program that they are sponsoring called Let's Talk Healthy Family Relationships, dealing with healthy relationships, family stress, and self-care in that October is Domestic Violence Prevention Month. This is going to take place on Saturday, October 24th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Garfield Community School in Menlo Park. If you're interested and would like to learn more about this, let me give you a phone number, 650-573-2614. 650-573-2614 if you'd like to find out more about it, again on Saturday, October 24th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. All right, we're going to have a couple more people, I think, join us to talk about this. By the way, for those of you who will be listening to us live next week, which will be October 21st, we're going to do a program on landlord-tenant law, and we will have a call-a-lawyer night with landlord-tenant attorneys off the air at 800-525-9917, where you can talk with a landlord-tenant off the air, no obligation whatsoever. Our program, by the way, will also be live, and you can call in and speak with my guests on the air. That's what we're doing next week. And for those of you who may not be familiar with it, we will be doing, by the way, our regular Call a Lawyer night on October 28th. We'll have a number of attorneys in the conference room here at the station KLW in San Francisco who will talk to you off the air. Again, no obligation. On the air, we're going to talk about Kids and the Law, which is a guide that the State Bar of California has put out. It's actually something that deals with primarily California law, but it's a very valuable guide. It's a number of pages, and it might be something if you are a parent and have a young kid. We're going to be talking about juvenile law. We're going to be talking about kids' law. And for wherever you may be, in that we are now on the NPR public radio satellite, if you're in another state, you'll be able to access the State Bar's website and actually order a free copy of the guide. Stacy, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. And you, Stacy, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good.
I have a question about sex offenders and vindication or expungement. For instance, let's say that someone was convicted of being a sex offender and given a felony, which removes their right to vote, and it's really hard for them to get a job. Well, let's say that the offended party comes back and says, you know what, when I know I was underage, but I did consent, I would like for this person not to be strapped with this for the rest of their life. I'm just wondering for the people there this evening why it's so difficult to get that taken care of. Thank you.
That's a very good question. Who would like to... Jeff, would you like to respond to this? Obviously, this was an underage, I presume, young woman. There was a prosecution for rape, probably, because this person was underage, and a conviction. And so what comments do you have, generally speaking? Obviously, you can't give specific legal advice at this point.
We don't have enough information to grant a lot of specific advice. You mentioned somebody underage. You mentioned rape, and rape takes a lot of forms. It may not have been forcible. It may have been someone that was not of age to consent or for some other reason not able to consent. I can tell you the nature of the crime may afford certain relief. You mentioned, for example, that this person cannot vote. They do have the right to vote back once they have completed their sentence and they're no longer incarcerated. So they don't lose that. And in fact, if they don't get sent to prison, they could actually vote from within the jail. Mm-hmm. Only during the time they're serving a prison sentence do they actually lose that right for a short time. Other disabilities stay with them forever. There was a recent change in law. The California Supreme Court had a window where for certain types of sex offenses, you were able to get off of the 290 list because of an equal protection problem.
That's Penal Code 290, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
And now the state Supreme Court changed their minds. In essence, one justice retired, a new justice came in, they forged a new majority. And the justice who wrote the minority opinion now writes the majority and says, we probably didn't think this through. And you can no longer do that for that class of offense. But it's always been very difficult. Politically, it is a very highly charged issue. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that frightens parents more than when they have children and they find something threatening them in their neighborhood.
Sure.
And sex offenses have always been at the top of the list. There are resources available. There may be some type of post-conviction relief if there was a problem with the way the case was prosecuted, the way it was defended, if there are questions of innocence that come out years later. But in terms of just getting that type of relief because the parties all agree that maybe this overshot the target, that's very difficult.
You know, Stacy, I want to mention something to you, and perhaps this will be of some interest to you since obviously you're very concerned about this. I noticed that you are calling from Oakland, apparently. Well, you might want to contact the Alameda County Bar Association Lawyer Referral Service and see if you might be able to, or if you're calling on behalf of someone, might be able to get an appointment with a criminal defense attorney in Alameda County. And that number for the Alameda County Bar Association Lawyer Referral is 510-302-2222. 510-302-2222, in case you're interested in following up on the next step. All right, who do we have? I think we have time, a little bit of time left for another call or two, and I want to take those if we can. If you would, Martin, get somebody up here so I know who we are going to be talking with. Are there any points, Judge, that we haven't even touched upon that you want to mention at this point?
Well, just to rehash a couple of things that I think that are important is that the proposition is not perfect. There's a couple of things that, as a citizen, I would prefer that would to be different. One had to be that guns would still be a felony. The other is a date rape drug would still be a felony. And it's very hard to modify propositions. That's the problem when we legislate by proposition. But this isn't just with respect to 47. It also happened with Proposition 21, which changed juvenile law in many respects. It also happened with respect to Proposition 13, which changed in terms of how property taxes are assessed. So this isn't something that's a new thing in terms of it being problematic. This is the nature of propositions. It was mentioned earlier that the citizens are unhappy with how things are done in their county. They can always reelect a different district attorney. The reality is that district attorneys as incumbents are, just like any other incumbent, very, very difficult to replace. But there's another important difference, I believe, between district attorneys and any other type of incumbent, and that is that district attorneys have a responsibility to do justice. They can't file charges, even if they can prove them beyond a reasonable doubt, if it wouldn't be justice and with respect to the particular case. That's a much larger responsibility than other kinds of people that are running for different kinds of offices. I certainly didn't mean to apply by my comments in terms of what my experiences were, that I was referring to San Mateo County or to any other county other than Santa Clara County. Those were my experiences in terms of what was happening during the period of time at which I was sitting. And that was one of the reasons why I had concerns, is that because they weren't using their discretion, they were very punitive. So some counties are going to be reasonable, like San Mateo, and others are going to be unreasonable. And obviously, if the citizens passed it, their concern was in terms of experience, which wasn't always positive, or at least I think that's a fair inference.
We have about half a minute left in the actual substance of the program. And any last comments by either of the three of you? They're silent, everybody.
Thanks for having me on the show, Chuck. I appreciate that.
Well, nice to have you on the show, really. Well, I want to thank the three of you for being on the program. It's been a pleasure to have you. This is a very difficult area, and it's something where I think that the whole idea of 47 is to try to give people an opportunity for rehabilitation as opposed to keeping them in prison, etc. The same with the other part of public realignment. In any event, let me tell you what's going to happen next week. We're going to do a program on landlord-tenant disputes and issues. My guests will be landlord-tenant attorneys Salvatore Timpano and James Coy Driscoll. If you're listening to the program live next week on October 21st, we will also have Call a Lawyer Night with two landlord-tenant attorneys off the air at 1-800-525-9917. I want to thank you, Judge Hyman, for joining us. Assistant District Attorney Al Serrato, thank you very much. Jeff Hayden, President of the San Mateo County Bar Association, thank you very much for joining us. Great to have the three of you on the program. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr, production assistant Martin McClain. This segment of Your Legal Rights has been made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar and the San Mateo County Bar Association. Additional funding for the program is made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar, the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program, and I think I didn't say the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. And thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights Public Radio, and please join us next time. I'm Chuck Finney.